What is humanity's greatest achievement? Language? Science? Space travel? I'm not sure how you define greatness, but I would offer this one for consideration. A little over 40 years ago, humankind eradicated smallpox. In today's episode, a celebration of the knowledge, the work, and the people who made it happen. You're listening to I Heart This. I'm Ben Lord. Let's talk about what we love. There will be a last time for everything. A last time you walk in the walls of your high school. A last time you'll see a dear friend. One day the last star will exhaust its fuel and leave the universe in cold and darkness. But not every last will be sad. Take, for example, the case of Ali Mao Malin, who in October of 1977 became the last person ever to contract a naturally occurring case of smallpox. You and I don't need... That's like the entire population of the United States on the low end, and the population of the US and Russia combined on the other. Numbers like this strain our ability to understand them, and they obscure the real weight of smallpox's devastation. I know that if one of my own children died from such a disease, my grief would be infinite. How do you multiply that by 500 million? In a world where diseases like smallpox regularly come out of nowhere to kill loved ones of all ages, people did what they could to protect themselves. In Africa and China, this led to the practice of intentionally infecting healthy people with the variola virus in hopes of helping them to develop some kind of immunity. Usually this meant taking material from the smallpox pustules from an infected neighbor and smearing it into a small cut in the skin of a healthy person. The resulting infection was usually much milder than the smallpox caught by inhaling virus particles. But not always. People often died from these intentional inoculations, but smallpox was so feared, it was a risk that people were willing to take. This practice was brought to the Americas by enslaved Africans, and to Europe by way of the Ottoman Empire. By the late 1700s, European doctors had standardized the procedure, which became known as variolation. That's when a group of country doctors from England noticed something strange about some of the patients they variolized. Usually, following a successful inoculation, a patient would become ill, and pustules would grow over the site of infection. But for some people, no mark appeared. Why? One of those doctors, a man named John Fuster, put the pieces together when one unaffected patient, a farmer, told him that he'd not ever had smallpox, but he'd had cowpox to a, quote, violent degree. Cowpox is a related but much less lethal virus that infects both cows and humans. Infected cows often get a rash on their udders, and if you milk them, it readily spreads the infection to human hands. And since the virus that caused cowpox is similar enough to the virus that caused smallpox, the immune system of those exposed to cowpox often developed an immunity to both. This was an interesting phenomenon, but it didn't immediately suggest any useful treatment. Getting cowpox was dangerous too. And it was certainly safer to variolate patients than it was to have them go out and milk infected cows. It wasn't until Edward Jenner, a colleague of Fuster's, decided to combine the two paths to immunity by intentionally inoculating patients' skin with the cowpox virus instead of the smallpox one. In doing so, Jenner invented the vaccine, and not just a vaccine or the first vaccine, but the vaccine. As a student of Romance languages will know, a vaccine isn't just an inoculation. It is an inoculation from la vache, la vaca, a cow. Hence, vaccination. At first, the procedure was controversial, but as the safety and efficacy became clear to people through repeated trials, vaccinations spread across Europe and then across other parts of the world. And as it did, smallpox began to decline. You'd be forgiven for thinking that this was the climax of my story, but it's not. Despite advances in vaccine technology and widespread use of the vaccine, smallpox continued to claim millions of lives. It wasn't until 1872, nearly a century after Jenner's introduction of the vaccine, that the island country of Iceland introduced mandatory smallpox vaccinations for all and became the first country in the world to eliminate it. By 1900, only two other countries had followed suit. In the United States, smallpox lasted through the entire 19th century, through the Roaring Twenties, through two world wars and a Great Depression, and was only finally eradicated in 1948, just 4 years before my parents were born. In 1959, the World Health Organization accepted a resolution to eliminate smallpox worldwide, but it turned out to be little more than high-minded rhetoric. The ambitious goal was underfunded and understaffed. Having secured their own immunity, it seemed the wealthy countries of the world had little political will to extend the blessings of vaccination to their poor neighbors. So even in 1966, 2 million people were still dying of smallpox every year. That fact changed in no small part thanks to someone you've probably never heard of, a doctor from Lakewood, Ohio, named Donald Ainsley Henderson, whom everyone just called DA. Trained at the CDC, he was recruited in 1967 to head up the World Health Organization's initiative to intensify and reinvigorate the languishing eradication program. If you likened the eradication of smallpox to a war, DA became its commander-in-chief. And he would come to be revered around the world for his leadership. He convinced a skeptical world that eradication was possible. Where others got caught in protocol or power struggles, Henderson adapted to meet the constantly changing challenges. He was a master delegator who appointed people who would challenge him when he went astray, and he listened to them when they disagreed. He believed that a leader in public health had to have their boots on the ground, and so he traveled the world, coordinating, talking to people, listening. And perhaps most important of all, he had a talent for making the tens of thousands of people involved in the eradication effort to feel like they were part of something remarkable, even when faced with formidable challenges. And those challenges really were formidable. There was no roadmap to eradicating a disease. It had never been done before, and it literally required walking to the ends of the earth. They had to bring vaccines to people who lived in places where no road had ever gone. How do you keep track of a program that involves billions of people? How do you convince skeptic after skeptic that getting jabbed with a needle by a stranger could be the very thing that saves your life? What happens when you have to do that in a war zone? How do you keep the vaccine viable in hot climates with no refrigeration? How do you get governments to keep funding the project over a decade when the goal has lost its novelty and because of your earlier successes, the danger of smallpox seems so far away? How do you even know if you've succeeded? Even in hindsight, it seems impossible that such a project could happen. D.A. Henderson may not have the name recognition of Abraham Lincoln or Dr. King, but I think his contributions to the world have had a lasting impact that ranks with theirs, not just because he led the effort to end smallpox, but because he showed us that something like it was even possible. But the eradication of smallpox wasn't the result of any one person, however wise a leader they might be. And this is the thing that I find most awe-inspiring and beautiful about it. The only way that the project happened was because the entire world worked together. It took an army, a literal army, tens of thousands of healthcare workers, finding outbreaks, conducting contact tracing, getting vaccines where they needed to go. It took the collaboration of the sworn enemies of the US and USSR during some of the hottest moments of the Cold War. It took strategy, it took technological innovations like new kinds of bifurcating syringe needles. In India alone, it took over a billion house calls. Think of all the unknown stories a of heroism that this means. All of those people, quietly, doggedly, doing the work that brought this gift to every last village in the world. Cynics who believe that human beings are always just looking out for themselves, motivated solely by profit and self-interest, would never have predicted this. There are so many ways it could have failed, but it didn't, because people all over the world agreed that if we had the power to end this suffering, then we had to do it. Which brings me back, at last, to the case of Ali Maomalan, the last person in history to contract a natural case of smallpox. Ali was working as a cook in a hospital in a town on the coast of Somalia when he was called upon to help escort an infected family to a smallpox isolation camp. And part of that escort involved a 15-minute car ride in a Land Rover. And it's believed that it was within that brief window that Ali was infected. One of the children in that vehicle, a 6-year-old girl, would become the last person on Earth to die from a naturally acquired smallpox infection. 10 days later, when Ali came down with a fever, he was treated for malaria. Now, no one suspected smallpox because all the hospital workers were expected to be vaccinated. That was the protocol. But Ali had been afraid of the needle, afraid that the injection would hurt, and so he had avoided the mandatory vaccination. Even when the characteristic pustule started to form, Ali didn't report it. A colleague had to turn him in. And by the time he was diagnosed correctly, he had been out of quarantine for 14 days. The response that followed was the result of a decade of practice containing outbreaks around the world. Workers snapped into action. They identified every single one of the people that Ali had been in contact with since his infection. They tracked every single one of them down and vaccinated anyone who hadn't been vaccinated already. For 6 weeks, they monitored hundreds of people, and then they delivered vaccines to every person in the city ward where Ali lived. The outbreak was completely, swiftly, and efficiently contained, and Ali made a full recovery. But that didn't mean that he was left unscathed by infectious disease. Sometime later, his younger sister died of the measles, a disease that, just like smallpox, could have been prevented and even eradicated with the safe and effective vaccines widely available in the wealthier countries of the world. In shock after his sister's death, Ali trained as a health worker and volunteered for the World Health Organization's next great eradication campaign against polio. As he said to a reporter from the BBC, "Somalia was the last country with smallpox. I wanted to ensure that we would not be the last place with polio too." Ali disseminated vaccines and talked to reluctant patients and parents nervous about vaccinating their children. He said, "I tell them my story. I tell them how important these vaccines are. I tell them not to do something foolish like me." This was dangerous work. At the time, Somalia was not so much a country as a territory ruled by warring gangs. Vaccinators were fired upon. Plenty of militia leaders believed the vaccine wasn't safe, and Ali had to try to change their minds. In 2013, he was still distributing vaccines when he developed a fever and died days later, on the 22nd of July, of malaria. There was never, and there would never be, any cure for smallpox. Smallpox is caused by a virus, and so it can't be treated with antibiotics. Still, by the time I was born in 1977, Ali's final case of smallpox had been clear for 2 months. And when I was 2 years old, the World Health Organization officially declared that smallpox had been eradicated, the first and only eradication of its kind. I love this story for what it says about diseases, that even though so many exist, that not all of them have to. We have the power to stop so many of them, far more than we did in 1966. Smallpox eradication showed us that it was possible. In many ways, it made it possible. We spend enormous sums of money to fight cancer and ALS worthy and important goals where we make progress one small step at a time. But with many of the diseases that the rich countries in the world forget, the ones that we think of as dinosaurs, polio, measles, the mumps, whooping cough, guinea worm, malaria, even tuberculosis, we could end them for a fraction of the cost. That is a hope worth believing in. But there's another reason I love this story. I also love this story for what it says about us, about who we can be. Look at all we overcame. That was us. That was humanity. Look at the magnitude of that work. It extended from jungles to deserts, from remote villages to war zones, all of it done without computers, without satellite communications, often without even electricity or refrigeration. Look at the cooperation and trust that we were able to inspire. We crossed every boundary of race and religion and politics. We decided that the freedom from disease that the rich had already won for themselves could and should be extended to every living person, regardless of who they were, or the color of their skin, or where they lived. The people who won that victory are mostly gone, and their names are mostly unknown, but their legacy remains. That monumental achievement cost the world $300 million. For comparison, the Manhattan Project cost $2 billion. The Apollo program cost $26 billion. Even adjusting for inflation, the eradication of smallpox was a staggering bargain. It is estimated that the U.S. recoups its portion of that investment every 26 days. But that is nothing next to the fact that none of us, not you, not me, not the poorest family in Somalia, will ever have to watch our children blinded, disfigured, or killed by smallpox again. And there is no way to put a price tag on that. Ideas spread much like viruses do, and often more benevolently, from one person to another, sometimes between people we know, sometimes in brief encounters with strangers. Through iHeartThis, I've been committed to spreading the idea that the world is a better place for everyone when we all stop to appreciate wonderful things. If iHeartThis has inspired you, sharing it is as easy as sending a link to a friend, and I would deeply appreciate it if you did. iHeartThis has new episodes every Wednesday, so tune in next week. It is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Bryony Morrow Cribbs. Our website is iHeartThisPodcast.com. You can email me at ben@iHeartThisPodcast.com, and I'm on Facebook at iHeartThisPodcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind, be curious, and be thankful.